This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotato.com.
50 years ago, the world was introduced to the phenomenon that was Star Trek. Popular culture was changed forever, and eventually it became 6 television series and 13 motion pictures. People from all walks of life have been affected by it. Their lives have been affected by the lessons and the philosophies that they took away from it. This is the story of those fans. Interviews with individuals who love Star Trek and believe that their lives are better because of it. This is their prime direction. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Prime Direction, the Star Trek fandom podcast. A couple of months ago, you heard my conversation with Christopher DeFilippis, and I told you that he was one of the hosts of 112263, an event podcast. Well, this month, I had the chance to chat with the other host. On this episode, I talked with Skipper Martin about his Star Trek fandom. He didn't start out as a fan when he was a kid, but like a lot of us, the show kind of grew on him, and now he considers himself a fan. So we talked about which shows he liked, which movies he liked, which ones he didn't, how Star Trek has impacted his life. And we also talked a lot about the future of the franchise and, you know, with the new series that's coming out this fall and the Kelvin timeline movies. Skipper's about to start a new podcast with Chris called the Castle Rock TV Podcast. They're going to analyze a ton of Stephen King books and movies leading up to the Hulu series Castle Rock that's going to be released sometime next year. Their first episode is out now at crtvpodcast.com. Of course, you can still hear every episode of 112263, an event podcast, which is on barrenspace.com. That's barrenspace.com. And Skipper's also a writer with a couple of comic book credits to his name. Bizarre New World is a major project of his that you can find at fracturedentertainment.com. It's a graphic novel about what the world would be like if suddenly everyone had the gift of flight. So go check that out. I'm going to post links to all that stuff on the website at cosmicpotato.com if you want to go there and check it out later. And before we get started, I want to let you know where you can find the show and how you can get in touch with me. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher. Soon I'll have it on Google Play and Spreaker. I'm working on that right now. I'd love to hear from you, especially if you'd like to be a guest on the show. I'm looking for Star Trek fans from all walks of life, so go to my website at cosmicpotato.com, click on the contact tab at the top of the page, and you'll see links to my Facebook and Twitter pages, as well as the email address, which is mail@cosmicpotato.com. Send me an email, and we'll work out a time for me to chat with you. Okay? Well, time to get the show started. Enjoy this interview with Skipper Martin. Tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Oh, let's see. Well, I was on your show one time before. I was pimping, I believe, or at least crossing over to talk about 112263, an event podcast. Yep. And we're actually wrapping that sucker up right now and about to kick over to a new podcast with my partner, Chris DeFilippis, for the Castle Rock TV podcast.
Yeah.
And that's what's currently on the horizon. And then when I'm not doing that, when I'm not a dazzling podcaster, I'm a colorist at Universal Studios.
Oh, cool. So you you work on any shows that the audience may be familiar with?
Superstore is the main show that I work on. I do the dailies for that show. AP Bio is another show that got picked up, and so that's starting again soon. And those are the two main shows that I'm working on right now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like Superstore.
I love Superstore. I just love the show, and everyone involved has been so very, very cool. So it's one of the rare times I've worked on a show where I can say, please watch it. It's really great.
Yeah. Where are you from originally?
Well, I was mostly raised in Azusa, California, but I was born in Philadelphia. So my brother likes to make fun of me, but he's the only native Californian. You know, he was actually born here.
Yeah. Okay. So, you, just one brother? Did you have more?
Older brother Scott is the native Californian. Younger brother Randy, he's also a fake native Californian like me.
Okay. Well, tell me your earliest memory of Star Trek.
Oh, that's easy. I hated it. Hated it. But I have to be clear here. That's that show my older brother and my dad watched.
Yeah.
That's all it was to me. So there were certain things. Clearly, I was tragically unhip. They loved things like Planet of the Apes, Twilight Zone, and Star Trek. So I had to hate those by default. I eventually came around on all three. Slow learner, but I got there eventually.
Yeah, I go back and try to think about what I can remember of Star Trek from when I was a kid. And I guess it was just at the time of day that it came on. It came on in the afternoons or it came on at night. So I always had in my head, that's a grown-up show, you know, so I wasn't interested. And it had nothing to do with what it looked like because I loved Land of the Lost and it looked terrible.
I feel the same way. You're definitely within my age range. Same thing. Land of the Lost, had no problem with it. But I would see Star Trek, I would hear those sound effects, and I would go, oh, that's that adult show, and I would just stay away from it. But it wasn't until I think the movies, my dad would drag me to, you know, specific movies, and it was probably Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan. Yeah, that was probably the first one I went, oh, hey, this is cool.
Yeah.
but I didn't register it that way. I liked that movie, and then it would show up. And then from time to time, I would see the motion picture, and that didn't do anything for me. But I enjoyed two so much, I had to see three. And probably by the time three came out, then I became hooked.
Yeah, so you started going back and watching the episodes and everything?
Nope.
Oh, you didn't?
Nope. I refused to watch that show. I'm not going to do it. Forget it. Not going to happen. Never really liked Star Trek One, although it gets the job done. Now I appreciate it more. But two, three, I enjoyed the original cast. And then the big deal for me was probably, hey, did you hear? They're making a new Star Trek, this new thing called The Next Generation. Wow, that sounds really cheesy. That sounds terrible. What a terrible title. I think it's going to be awful. And then you see it, and I was really blown away from it. But it tapered off quickly. I started watching it, and then it just kind of didn't do anything for me. Like a lot of people, seasons one and two are pretty weak.
Yeah.
So I fell away from it, and then later on it started to pick up steam, and then the famous Best of Both Worlds. When that happened, I got back into it for a while and then fell back out, and then I just forgot about it. Then I was working in the industry back then in the early 90s, and Deep Space Nine, there was all that excitement. I watched a couple episodes of that, and then I fell off of that, and I would stick with the movies, and I was kind of, I was a poser, okay? I was a Star Trek poser. And then I think when Star Trek The Next Generation came out on DVD, up until then I would just see it in reruns.
Yeah.
When it hit DVD for the first time, then I bought it. I paid for it, and then I just went through the entire series, and then I became a fan. And from then on, I pretty much saw everything, almost. I eventually did go back to watch the original series. I now completely appreciate it. I don't love every episode. I'm not a hardcore Trekker. But I have seen damn near everything, except I quit out of Voyager. I tapped out around season five or six.
Oh, well, you made it pretty far.
I did. I made it pretty far, but I just couldn't do it. And then I've tried a couple of the animated series. So I've seen a lot of it. I'm not a hardcore, but I am excited about the new show, and I probably have a fair amount to talk about.
The animated series is not something that I've ever gone back and watched a lot. I've seen one or two episodes, mostly when I was a kid. You know, they came on Nickelodeon in the afternoons. Actually, I think I probably watched the animated series before I really got into the show. And I didn't even realize it was the same people doing the voices and all that kind of stuff. But
sure.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird looking cartoon to get into, because it's kind of got that animation style that you know from Hanna-Barbera back in those days. Was that Hanna-Barbera?
No, that's Filmation.
Filmation, that's right. Yeah, so it's like Super Friends and stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I tried a couple episodes, and you know, for what it is, I think it's pretty amazing. Although it wasn't amazing enough for me to sit down and have to watch all of them, but I really appreciated it, especially hearing those voices and then just certain things about it. I mean, I understand the limitations of what they're doing, but for what they're doing, it's pretty cool. It's not, you know, if I was a hardcore fan, I would insist on watching it, but I never got that hardcore.
Yeah. Well, since you weren't really a fan of the show when you were a kid, like the original series, like when you were a little kid, what was it about the movies and The Next Generation that connected with you and made you a fan of those?
Wow, that's a tough question. I can only guess at what I responded to. I think it all begins and ends with the characters. That's probably why I didn't really jive with The Next Generation at first, because everything was so stilted. But by the time you got to Star Trek II, boy, those characters are vivid and interesting and fun, and that easily kept me going up till, you know, the original cast member movies ended. And then I probably got into it more and more as time went on, with especially The Next Generation. Now I'm a huge, huge Next Gen fan. I've seen every episode multiple times. And Deep Space Nine, when I really enjoyed Deep Space Nine, but ultimately, and I would argue Deep Space Nine is definitely better than Next Gen. I'm definitely one of those people. I was fascinated by a thinking person's show. I think I was drawn into at first, of course, the concept. And that's where I think the new show is really kind of blowing it for me. We'll get into that. But I love the idea that you just didn't know where they were going to go.
Yeah.
They were heading to the unknown. Something was going to happen. So every week, anything could happen. And you could get any kind of show. It was kind of an anthology kind of show, right? You didn't know where they were going to wind up.
Yeah.
And that was exciting to me. So the idea of going backwards and telling another prequel depresses me to no end. But we'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get
there. It wasn't until later that I realized that so many people kept saying, oh, it's this positive view of the future. Oh, yeah. I didn't think of it that way. But, yeah, it's kind of just there under the surface. It's kind of like how you want the future to be. And that is attractive.
I got to agree with you about Deep Space Nine. The Next Generation is definitely the show that hooked me and got me into Star Trek. But Deep Space Nine is better written. Definitely. Some of the acting is better, you know. I didn't think Next Generation had terrible acting. Not after season two, anyway.
Right.
But I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that the studio wouldn't let Next Generation do some of the things that they wanted to do. You know, they kept a stranglehold on them and said, no, you have to do it this way and this way and this way. Deep Space Nine, the studio didn't really expect it to succeed, so they just kind of let them do whatever they wanted to do, and it made it better.
So. Yeah, that's kind of what you can see. You can kind of see that it's Star Trek a little more unfiltered, and then that's why Battlestar Galactica, of course, the reimagining of that, I think, was so ridiculously successful.
Yeah.
Because Ronald Moore was able to take everything he really wanted to do, and you could tell he was just able to actually go where he wanted to go, and that's why that show is really incredible. I'm amazed at how well that show really turned out. It's so good.
Have you ever gotten into any of the comics or novels for Star Trek?
Star Trek novels, very, very few. The only thing I read, I found easily one of my very favorite episodes of all time. Period. Television at all has got to be the series finale to Star Trek The Next Generation, All Good Things.
Yeah.
And I, to this day, I still, you know, put that up there as a benchmark of really, really satisfying ending. And everything about that show was so intriguing to me. When it got novelized, I had to buy that. So I read that. I read... I listened to Spock versus Q, both of them. Those are, you know, really great.
Yeah.
And the only other Trek book, I may have read others, but the only other one that is popping into my head because I just had to read it out of curiosity was the Borgified Kirk after Kirk was resurrected, written by William Shatner. I don't even remember the title. Wow, I hated that book.
I think it was called The Return. He actually did a trilogy. He did a trilogy. The first one was called Ashes of Eden, and then The Return was the one that you're talking about. And I can't remember what the name of the third one was.
That book was shameless, shamelessly bad. It was so bad. My favorite part of that book, by far, everything you need to know about William Shatner, forget Star Trek, forget anything, everything you need to know about that guy, I've never met him, and he might be the nicest guy you ever met, but the way he describes Kirk is hysterical. It, you know, when Kirk comes back, he described him, and as there he is, Kirk, the man, the broad chest. I mean, he just describes him as such a muscular badass. Like, oh my God, it's the resurrection of Godzilla. The way he came back and how he described himself was so hysterical. Honestly, laugh out loud, ridiculous. I remember listening to the audiobook, which of course is the only way to absorb a William Shatner story, is to get him to read it to you.
Right.
And when he, in his own voice, has to put on the emphasis of Kirk coming back and Kirk's hands and Kirk's arms and whatever, it was so unintentionally funny.
I'm still not convinced that he actually wrote that book. I know his name is on it, but I know.
Oh, I'm convinced. I'm convinced. It's awful. Yeah. So I'm convinced.
Well, I know. Well, yeah. Well, you can tell that he's never watched an episode of The Next Generation. He doesn't know those characters, you know.
No, so, no, he doesn't.
Because there was one part of the book where he was writing after they found him, after they found Kirk, they took him to Deep Space Nine. So, of course, Dr. Bashir was there, and you could tell. He doesn't know how to write those characters. He doesn't know how they talk. He doesn't know the things that they say. So, but yeah, that novelization of All Good Things that you mentioned, that was written by Michael Jan Friedman. He was on this show a while back. He's a really nice guy too. He's probably written at least 60 Star Trek novels.
I remember that being very enjoyable. Yeah. I remember it fleshing out the show just a little bit, you know, more. It had a little more depth to it, and it was a great companion for anyone who loved that series finale. I thought it was a great companion.
The original series films, you said that you kind of got into Star Trek through watching those. So which one is your favorite?
I hate to go with the cliche, but yeah, Wrath of Khan. You can't go wrong. It's so good.
I don't think it's a cliche. I just think it's true. I think that is definitely the best of those six movies. I mean, you've got the old saying that the even number movies are the best, which with those six movies, I guess that's true, because 2, 4, and 6 were definitely the best three. The first one was made mostly for fans, but with they knew that they had a set core audience that were going to come see this movie, and it didn't really matter what they did, you know. So they tried a few things. They tried to make it look different and everything, and it some things worked, some things didn't. But then when they came back to do the second one, they made that movie, yeah, for Star Trek fans, but also just for action science fiction fans, you know. Everybody could go and watch that movie. If you had never seen Star Trek before, you would still be able to appreciate that movie.
I think one of the reasons that Star Trek II works as well as it does, it's one of those movies that, you know, anyone who likes Star Trek at all eventually revisits from time to time. And there's some great retro screenings in Los Angeles from time to time. It'll pop up. You can go see it live. What I'm fascinated by in that movie, yes, Khan and Ricardo Montalban's great, and the space battles are fun, and there's so many other great things about it, but why the movie absolutely, you know, ranks up there as one of the best is all of the other scenes that are just character scenes. You know, Bones coming to Kirk and giving him his gift.
Yeah.
And that great little scene right there. In a lot of movies, a scene like that would be set up exposition, boring. But these characters come alive. It feels like those two actors, I mean, it feels like most of the actors in 2 are finally given the chance to do something they could never do on the original series, or at least never do, not never, but to be in a feature and have the grandiosity of a feature film, right? To have, to really be able to go for it, you know, your special effects don't look, you know, made with tinfoil, you know. They were able to get on a serious stage and explore those characters, and it looked like they were eating it up. They were relishing the opportunity. Whereas in the first one, you could tell they all showed up to play, but the script didn't really give them much to work with. I enjoy Star Trek: The Motion Picture now because I can appreciate, especially the artistry and how it's made, and so many great things about it. But as a film, it doesn't really work, and it is pretty boring. Star Trek II doesn't have any of that. It doesn't really have. It has no wasted moments. It doesn't waste anything. Mm-hmm. You know, a scene in an elevator in Star Trek II is good, yeah. And worth watching. And so it's not a boring movie. And I think Star Trek III gets a little bit too much hate. There's some problems with III, but boy, I have a lot that I really enjoy about III.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd was great in that movie.
He was. And I said for the longest time that some of my favorite movies, it was the trilogy of 2, 3, 4. I love watching those three.
Yeah.
5 is, everyone knows about 5. And 6 is wonderful. I love 6. And then you get into the problematic Generations, which is a pretty unsatisfying movie. I love the idea of it, and there's great scenes, but it doesn't work. And then First Contact is so good. I love First Contact.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next. I was going to ask you. So you got into Star Trek The Next Generation. You said you weren't a huge fan of it until the DVDs and everything, but you watched enough of it to know who the characters were and everything. So after the show had been on for 7 years, and they announced that they were going to cancel the show and they were going to make a movie, how did you feel about that?
I was indifferent, I think. I kind of liked the idea, but at the same time, it was working so well on the show. To send it into the movies, I think I thought it was okay, and the trailer completely got me jazzed. Mm-hmm. But it didn't deliver. It wasn't until First Contact that, I mean, wow, you know, it's really tough for me between Wrath of Khan and First Contact, because they're so ridiculously enjoyable, and First Contact is like one of the only other great Star Trek movies that didn't try to rely on Wrath of Khan and try to rip it off.
Yeah.
It felt like its own, really its own thing. And you know, kind of like the original cast finally got the chance to step up and aim for greatness. I thought they were really trying. Everybody was firing. Every scene just works in First Contact. And it was downhill from there, but there you go.
Yeah, well, definitely they weren't depending on the original series, because with Generations they were kind of hanging it on Shatner coming back and doing his thing. But then the First Contact just seemed like more of a movie than Generations did. Generations felt like I was watching the TV show still. You know, except that they turned the lights way down for some reason. Like it was a really dark version of the show. But then, but with First Contact, having a new ship, and taking the action out of the 24th century and sending it back in time, bringing the Borg back, and the Borg they changed enough to make them more movie worthy. You know, film worthy versions of the Borg. They kind of made them dirtier and kind of gritty and everything. And it just felt more like I was watching an actual film than Generations did.
Yeah, it had a real pace to it. It just kind of snaps. It just really, I mean, from the jump, you move. It's a moving movie. It just goes. And Frakes, boy, man, when that guy was on, he was a great director. I thought he did a wonderful job on that movie. And there's a lot I like about Insurrection. I don't hate Insurrection. In fact, I like it quite a bit. Nemesis, Nemesis is a problem. And you could tell how good that could have been. And there's a lot to like, but yeah, it's not a movie I'm dying to revisit. And then we get into Enterprise. I'm one of the few people I warmed up to Enterprise, and I'm a big Scott Bakula fan.
Yeah.
I didn't love the show, but I certainly thought it deserved to go longer. It was really kind of hitting its stride, and that was a show that I think again, was all about character, and I like those characters. I thought they did a nice job. Great actors, great characters, and that's why I think that show works and kind of is worth going back to and looking at, even that, even if some of the scripts and that theme song, oh gosh, that horrible theme song. But you know, you can overlook its shortcomings. There's a lot to like in that show, but the whole idea, I was so excited to have them get back on television. And I'm sure I'm a complete broken record here when I say the new show. Can we get into the show?
Sure. Yeah, we can.
I'm sure I'm a broken record, but I was so jazzed at the idea that the next generation was, and you know, I'm talking to a fan here. You know what I'm talking about when I say they really tried to kind of hang, you know, strike their own path. They had the Star Trek name. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of the Star Trek conventions and so on and so forth. But they really tried, outside of that little McCoy cameo, mostly they tried to make their own show with some stumbles. You know, there was some retreading.
Right.
But they tried, you know, they gave it a shot. We are now way in the future. Everything's different. Everything looks different. Everything just is different. And we're going to explore strange new, emphasis on new, new worlds, stuff you haven't seen before with new characters. And that was exciting. Let's go and do something different. And hence why that show became so great when it finally broke out of, you know, the of its trappings, right? Mm-hmm. When it finally kicked the training wheels off, that's where it took off.
Right.
And you could spin it off into Deep Space Nine and Voyager because the concept was so strong. Let's go explore. And so, oh God, the idea of going backwards. We've already done that. And I haven't seen the show. I don't want to bash a show that hasn't even come out yet. But the whole notion of now you're trapped with, well, they can never kill Spock, you know, because, you know, if a Spock shows up or is even spoken about, you know, he's going to live because of, I mean, you know, so many things. That's why prequels most of the time are problematic, because we know where it's going. And that's where a new show set in the future could have kicked off those training wheels. Right. You could have done it again. Let's see. So, you know what? We already have communicators in our pocket. That doesn't wow us anymore.
Yeah.
We've already seen transporters. That doesn't wow us anymore. Kick the show another 100 years in the future and show me something I haven't seen. Go to places that we haven't explored. Do something new. That's what I wanted. And to find out that it was a prequel was kind of devastating. You finally get the chance to go back on television where it all started.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, just I get kind of mad thinking about the missed opportunity.
I agree. I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. But I'm looking at it as I kind of understand why they're doing some of what they're doing. Number one, the show is it doesn't take place in the same universe as the movies that are coming out now, but it still kind of takes place in the same time era because this is 10 years before the original series. That's when Star Trek Discovery takes place. And the movies, the J.J. Abrams movies, you know, they're in the original series. So I think that they're wanting to keep a little bit of a feel. Because if you watch the trailer that came out a couple months ago, there's a lot of lens flare in that trailer, which kind of is a thing from those movies. You know, that happens a lot in those movies. And I'm kind of getting the feeling that even though they're wanting to set the show in the Prime universe, they're wanting to keep a little bit of what's going on in the movies because they know that there's an audience for those movies. There are Star Trek fans that are only Star Trek fans of those movies. I mean, there's kids that watch those movies and they've never seen any of the series. So they're trying to keep some of that to come and watch their show. But to your point, I think that it probably would have been a good idea to do like you said and go further into the future than we were at Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and all that. The only problem that I saw with that is that they wanted to keep a little bit of recognition with some of the aliens, and they wanted to be able to, they want to have the option of the special guest stars and that kind of stuff that they might not be able to do if it takes place that far in the future. Even though they've got the Klingons in the show and they don't look like Klingons, you know, they they look completely different, which I really think that, that there's a lot of people complaining about the way the Klingons looked in that trailer. I think that the fact that they look different is going to be the point of their presence. I don't think that those are the Klingons that we're used to seeing. I think that that's going to be like a different race of Klingons or something like that. But
there's a certain timidity, wimpiness there. There is, and I get it. There's a marketing strategy behind it, but that also kind of falls back on why the Next Generation, comes across to me as a much braver experiment. They, were brave enough to kick it 100 years in the future and not have all those trappings and try to be its own thing. Even if it failed, the attempt is certainly worthy. Here, there is and I'm definitely treading old ground here, but there is a penchant, there's a trend right now in the Hollywood business, in the business of movie making, television, show business. There you go. Mm-hmm. In show business right now, no one wants to do anything besides reboots, remakes, reimaginings, because they only want the recognition and the marketing to come along with it. You can't make it the Kung Fu Kid. You have to make it the Karate Kid, mm-hmm. even though he's not yeah. he's not using karate. That's how bad we've gotten. But that, to me, is indicative of a real wimpiness, really just a full-blown wimpiness. No one wants to try to break out, and the audience is waiting for new voices to break out and show us something we haven't seen before. And that's when a Breaking Bad comes along and everyone jumps on it, mm-hmm. because it's new and we want new, but the studios can't sell new, or at least they believe they can't sell new. So let's not do a new Star Wars movie. Let's remake A New Hope, only one of the most recognizable, seen and overly saturated into our consciousness movies of all time. Yeah. Let's remake that to remind the audience what Star Wars is. The audience didn't need that, and that's where that movie fails so dramatically. Unfortunately, the rest of the movie is excellent. I love the new characters, and they didn't need to do that. And that's why that movie, to me, I love actually Star Wars: The Force Awakens, mm-hmm. but I certainly get bummed at the notion of, well, yeah, it's just a remake of A New Hope, and that's kind of painful to watch because they're going through the motions. So when it's original, or when it tries to be, it's great, and I love it, and I'm looking forward to the next one. But when it comes to Star Trek, same thing. Well, you could kick it forward, even if they only kicked it forward 20 years, right? What if you followed the timeline? That would have been interesting. Yeah. And Riker could show up, and you could bring in some of those faces from time to time as guest roles, and you still get your cake and eat it too. But right. We get new. Let's see new technology, new worlds, new characters, new stories, push it forward. To go backwards, I hope it's wonderful. I hope I'm wrong, and I could not wait to see that trailer. Ooh.
The one thing about it that gives me hope is that some of the people that are behind the scenes, Nicholas Meyer, Jonathan Frakes, they just announced that he's going to be directing at least one episode of the first season. Some of that stuff gives me hope, that at least people that we know how to do it are involved, and hopefully, they'll be able to keep the train on the track.
What did you think of that trailer?
I liked the trailer. Like I said, it's just when I saw that lens flare, I thought, oh man, this is they're turning this into the Abrams universe movies, which we'll talk about the Abrams universe in a minute. I don't hate those movies, but I wanted this to be what I've always known. You know, I wanted it to be, if you're going to put it in the Prime universe, I wanted to feel like it's my universe, you know. And when I saw that lens flare, I just thought, oh, they're turning this into the Abrams universe. But everything else that I saw, I kind of liked. Because when I saw the Klingons, I thought, man, the Klingons look weird. But then I realized that he's wearing like some kind of a bone necklace or something like that, and I thought, well, they look really primitive compared to what they had in the original series. And this is only supposed to be 10 years, so I know they didn't advance that much in 10 years, you know. So, yeah. So that's why I'm thinking this is some kind of a different race of Klingons that we've never heard of before. But
to that point, if you look at, let's say, internet art from the late 90s up until 2008, yeah, you could change quite a bit in 10 years. it is possible, you know, before internet, after internet, you've got mail to where we are now, you know, yeah, in a short amount of time, you know, you can make big changes. But to the point I was making before in regards to change and different, you know, you were able to say it perfectly. You were able to illustrate a beautiful point with what you just said. When it comes to, you know, trying something new, even if you fail, the attempt for me means a lot. When you remake Star Trek, let me give you an example. If I'm going to go and do a movie about terrorists taking over X, well, how do you what's the shorthand for that? Oh, that's Die Hard on a insert here.
Right.
Right. Die Hard in a school. Die Hard in a supermarket. Die Hard, you know, on a spaceship, which was done in The Next Generation. So, you know, someone came up with something new and defined it. And J.J. Abrams, love or hate those movies, and I really enjoy those movies. I like them a lot. Mm-hmm. I give them so much credit that they had every trapping, every lame, every safe, cheap, timid, that's the word I keep coming back to, timid choice could have been just to rehash everything we've seen before. And I think that first movie was able to use Spock but make him fresh and different, use the Enterprise and give it a new coat of paint. But more than that, that movie had such a distinct style that we now associate lens flares. You say, oh, you mean like, you know, the JJ lens flares. Well, they're not saying that about Mission Impossible. They're saying that about Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right? And so they created a new look. You can love or hate it. When you say JJ Abrams Star Trek, in your mind, you get an image. They created that. Think about that. Because nowadays, that is very rare. We don't have a whole lot of brand new ways of making things look that make it stand out. I'm a colorist. I can't tell you how many times someone will ask me, well, show me something I haven't seen before. Well, good luck, because everybody is saying that. And now when you flip around the dial, let's go back, you know, 20 years, CSI in its heyday when it came out, mm-hmm. What was that, in the 90s or early 2000s?
Yeah.
When that show came out, you could flip around the dial and land on that, whoa, what is this? This looks different. And it did. It looked different than anything else. Everything else was safer. Television does have a certain look.
Yeah.
And that show defined a look. And suddenly everybody was oversaturating and putting neon and, you know, trying to, you know, tech up their shows. And everyone was ripping off CSI because it was the number one show. And then Friday Night Lights came along, and I was lucky enough to work on that show. And they did the exact opposite. No. Strip it down. Pull back the color. Grainy, real docudrama. Mm. Feels like a documentary. And now when people say, oh, that looks like, well, the shorthand now is that looks like Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
Well, that looks like CSI. And that looks like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. And did they even try to do, when you look at that trailer, does it look like they are breaking new ground or treading the ground and, you know, following in the footsteps of other people? And that's why that show, the trailer lets me down on a lot of levels. On a lot of levels, that trailer lets me down. and I'm not a hater. I wanted so badly to love it, and I don't love it. And that's a bit of a tragedy for me anyway.
I'm really hoping it's good because I'm going to be doing an episode by episode podcast.
Oh, can I please talk to you about this? Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I know you had spoken to Christy Philippus recently, and I don't know if he mentioned this. Did he tell you that we were thinking about doing a Star Trek podcast for Discovery?
No, he didn't.
He didn't let that cat out of the bag. We're both Star Trek fans, and we thought about it. We really thought about it, and we started to really kind of put it together and just try to blow the doors off. Let's do something really great. How far could we take that idea? We get to talk about brand new Star Trek. We really were getting into the idea quite a bit. And somewhere in there, I think both of us just decided, you know what, there's going to be so many. I don't know if I want to put that much energy into something that there's, if you go on iTunes and type in Star Trek, you're certainly spoiled for choices.
Right.
And so, how much of a fresh voice or fresh anything are we going to be able, that we personally felt, what are we going to bring to it? And we decided, well, can we do something else that is maybe, you know, maybe we're a little bit more separated from, you know, from what other people are doing. And we kept looking for a while until we landed, well, we've done Stephen King. Do we really want to do Stephen King again? And we didn't, you know, at the concept level, but the idea of Castle Rock seems so different being this anthology. We can get into this later, but the idea seemed different enough. But back on the Star Trek thing, when we finally decided, no, we're not going to do a Star Trek podcast, I then had to wait, just like everybody else, for the trailer. And I had this conversation with Chris. I said, when that trailer dropped, if I had to talk about that and that was the show that I'm going to have to talk about, I would have been really depressed. And how do you, you're doing this, and I applaud you, and I'm not knocking you or anyone else is going to do the same thing. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's Battlestar Galactica. I hope it's better than Battlestar. I hope it's the best show I've ever seen in my life. I always want that. And I hope I eat my words later going, yeah, I remember Blonde James Bond. What a terrible idea. Boy, that's going to be crap. Did you see that? You know, and I'm happy to be wrong in that case. And I hope I'm wrong here. But you are now actively thinking and planning on the show coming out, and you're going to talk about it. And if I had to talk about Star Trek Discovery, that's not an enviable place.
Well, I don't have any disillusionment that I know this is not going to be the best Star Trek series ever made, but there's just something about the fact that, because I've been a Star Trek fan since I was I became a big Star Trek fan in my early teen years, like 13, 14. So it was around about the third season of Next Generation when I really started watching it every week. And the fact that there hasn't been any Star Trek on TV for, oh God, at least 12 years since Enterprise went off the air. I'm really excited about there being new episodes of Star Trek to watch every week. Now, I know it's not going to be the best Star Trek I've ever seen, but I think that what I've seen in the trailer, yeah, there's things in the trailer that I didn't like, but there was enough there that looked different to me to make me interested to at least, you know, give it a try. And we're only going to do, there's only going to be 15 episodes in the first season. We're not, like you guys on 11-22-63, you know, you did all the bonus episodes and all that. We're not doing all that. We're just going to do those 15 episodes, and then we'll be done until next season.
But wait, what? Okay, I have to ask. What do you do when you see the first 3 episodes, and they're all terrible? They're not just bad. They're bad.
Yeah.
Right. And what do you do? Would you ever just pull the plug and go, hey, we're calling it quits, guys. No. We're out of here.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be terrible. I think that there's going to be things about it that I'm not going to like. I think there's going to be things about it that I do like. I don't think there's going to be anything in it that I'm just going to absolutely hate. Because like I said, some of the people that are behind the scenes, I trust them. I trust Nicholas Meyer. I trust Jonathan Frakes. I trust some of the writers that I've seen their names. I've seen them attached to Star Trek before. And some of the guest stars that I've seen announced, like what's the guy's name that played Dwight on The Office? You know what I'm talking about. Rainn Wilson?
Rainn Wilson.
Yeah, see, they announced that he's going to be playing Harry Mudd. I think that he would make a perfect Harry Mudd, a younger version of Harry Mudd. I think that he could.
Yeah.
I think he could do that part pretty well. So, like I said, I don't think there's going to be anything there that I'm just going to absolutely hate.
I'd like to pose a question to you and to your audience. Do you get feedback, emails and such?
A little bit, not a whole lot, but yeah, a little bit.
You know, if you get any feedback for this, I'd like to pose a question. How many times have you seen a bad trailer? Now,
yeah,
in the pop culture world we live in, where there's just we are saturated with so much media, you know, you can say, oh, that person's a terrible actor. go back to the 70s and 80s and go see what really, really, really terrible actors are all about. You know, so when people nowadays say that trailer's awful, well, awful, we've seen some seriously bad trailers, yeah. You know, throughout the years. And my question is, when I'm racking my brain trying to remember the last time a stinker trailer, because remember, a trailer is the best that they could cobble together.
Right.
So, yeah, there are trailers that are underwhelming, but how often are there bad trailers? I would argue the reboot of Ghostbusters is a legitimately bad trailer. Now, is the movie as bad as the trailer? No, but it's not a great movie, but it's not as bad as that terrible, terrible trailer. But how often is a trailer not so good, but the product itself is actually really good? Like, we could joke about, oh, blonde, shorter James Bond. You know, he's kind of edgier, you know, kind of, you know, they were literally calling him ugly. Oh, man, you know, that guy, you know, that's no Sean Connery. And then the trailer comes out and most people shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So you could say I could say whatever I want. The Star Trek going backwards is, you know, exactly what it is. Star Trek going backwards. Bad idea. Prequels never work. Rarely work. And sometimes they do. But they rarely work. Why is it going backwards? Theory. Hate. Yada, yada, yada. And then it comes out and it's actually great. Well, that can happen. But how often does a trailer leave you wondering, I don't think that looks really good. And then it turns out to be great.
Yeah.
Can you give me any example off the top of your head? The last time you saw a trailer, wow, that looks pretty bad. But the movie was great.
Yeah. I mean, not off the top of my head. I'm sure
I can't think of a single one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure it's happened. But yeah, usually if I see a trailer and it, like I saw the trailer, okay, this is a bad example, but the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers came out this past spring. And I saw the trailer, and I was a little bit too old for Power Rangers when it came on, but I kind of liked the concept of it. So sometimes I would watch it while I was getting ready for school. And when I saw that they were making an updated version of it, I thought, huh, that looks like it might be pretty cool. The trailer looked pretty good. The movie was terrible. I mean, it was bad. It was so bad that, I mean, they didn't even put on their costumes until an hour and 10 minutes into the movie. And it was only an hour and 40 minutes long, you know? So yeah, you get a lot of that where you see a trailer that kind of looks like it's going to be okay. And then the movie is not.
Yeah. When I think of the trailer, and I haven't watched it probably in a month or two, but the last time I saw it, I think the things that struck me about it, and this is gonna—I don't like to criticize, to be perfectly honest. And you know, I'm a podcaster, of course I criticize, but I try to be as, you know, as fair as possible. I don't bash just to bash, and I don't like to, you know, crap on other people's work, but Michelle Yeoh. And I like Michelle Yeoh. Unfortunately, she's one of those actors who, for me, I never thought she carried the screen particularly well. She's not a, you know, authoritative, strong presence. She's not Patrick Stewart. And you could knock anything you want about season one, of Star Trek The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. But Jean-Luc Picard walked onto the screen, and you may not like everything you saw, but he carried that. You can go back and watch those early shows. He's there. He carries it.
Yeah.
Even as an unknown, he's not Patrick Stewart. He's some guy named Patrick Stewart, right? You don't know him. You know, he's the bald captain, the new guy. He ain't no Kirk, right? But, he carried the screen. And Michelle Yeoh seems to be the character who's supposed to be the gravitas. And she doesn't, for me, carry it. She doesn't really carry the weight. As a bad example, these are bad examples, Morgan Freeman, right? You know, that gravitas. Mm-hmm. Granted, that's a man and Michelle Yeoh is a woman. But, Holly Hunter, in some of her, more dramatic roles, Sigourney Weaver, these are people who carry the screen.
Yeah.
And, they're there and they have weight. They just grab your attention. Michelle Yeoh doesn't, for me anyways, doesn't do that. And then her underling, her protege, same thing. I don't get a whole lot of, that's the new captain. I don't feel that at all. And that's a problem, because I'm really supposed to hang my hat on that character. The side characters, again, feel so underdeveloped. Again, it's only a trailer, so that's unfair. But even in a trailer, it feels generic. It feels watered down. It doesn't feel exciting and fresh. The Klingons will probably be the closest thing to something fresh, even though it's completely stale. Oh, the Klingons again. But at least it's different. Even if I hate it, I at least applaud. Oh, look, that looks different to me. The suits, the outfits don't look that different. The overall aesthetic doesn't feel all that different. It feels kind of a watered down JJ looking show. And those are the things that, I grabbed onto the most. You can't talk about the big plot of the first episode without spoiling it. It's a teaser. We can't do that. I get it. But a teaser is meant to make you go, wow, I can't wait. The Blade Runner Blade Runner sequel coming out. That first teaser trailer, mm-hmm. Which shows you practically nothing. It's incredible. What it doesn't show you, what it hints at is incredible. Heath Ledger, the very first teaser trailer to Batman, and you just get to hear his voice for crying out loud. You got excited over that nothing. Go back and watch some of those teaser trailers. They have nothing to do with the films that they eventually became, but they got you going.
Yeah.
And this... I got none of that. And you know what? Maybe later on we'll go, wow, someone didn't do a great trailer to a really wonderful show. That's
yeah.
That's possible. And I hope to eat my words. But those are the things that, I'm not even really all that excited about the show coming up. And that's a shame. I should be on the edge of my seat. I should be waiting for this.
But you said you really do like the J.J. Abrams movies. Now they went back in time for those. They weren't like sequels to what we had seen before. So, but you were okay with those?
Not okay. At least in the beginning, I was like everybody else. Oh, you can't do a new Kirk.
Yeah.
You can't do a new Spock. You can't do it. And they proved me wrong. I could watch those movies and totally enjoy them. One of the perfect examples of I was wrong. I love the first Star Trek. I like a lot of Into Darkness, and I really liked a hell of a lot of the third one. Mm-hmm. So, I love to be proven wrong. Please prove me wrong. Make me eat my words. I would love to come back on here and go, man, did I blow it? But I'm not getting the smell of that right now.
That's pretty much the same way I felt about those three movies, because I was excited. I was kind of the opposite of what you said about the first one, because I was really excited about that movie, just because it was new. It was something different. It wasn't going back and watching reruns on Netflix. I was actually going to see a new story. And then the second one, I liked it when I watched it. I go back and I watch, every time I watch it now, I see something else wrong with it. But it was enjoyable when I was seeing it in the theater. The third one, I really liked. And it really felt like it was almost like I was watching an episode of the original series. with much better special effects. That's the other thing that I get that really gets on my nerves, that I talk to people online, or I see people commenting online about this new series, is that, well, if it takes place in the past, why does it look so much more futuristic? And I'm like, do you want them to make cardboard sets? Because the original series was filmed in the 60s. You can't do that now. You have to make something that's going to be comparable or better than the other stuff that we're watching on TV. Or nobody's going to watch something that's the same quality of the original series.
But see, therein lies the perfect argument to why Discovery is a bad idea. Yeah. That is, and I'm not, I don't want to, be a hater, but the fact is, wouldn't it be great? Can you imagine with the special effects today and the storytelling, with the talent that we have in Hollywood that could make wonderful movies, wouldn't a Back to the Future remake be amazing? If only you could get Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd to come back. Yeah. Oh, wait, you can't. Oh, well, there's the if only that kills that idea.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So why is a, prequel to Star Trek a problem? Well, because it has to be futuristic, even though it's set years before. If only that. Well, if only is the reason why you don't do that show. And one of the reasons Enterprise was kind of, mocked was, it looks more futuristic than, the original show from the 60s. Yeah. But I thought they bridged it really well because I love that bridge between us today, NASA looking technology, and a little bit of Star Trek thrown in, and it's more metal and blah, blah, blah. I thought that was, as a concept, really strong. But I think those are the deal killers that kind of make the idea of the concept of Discovery problematic. But going back a second, what you said ago about Star Trek Into Darkness, because you just brought up some old bile that I thought I'd swallowed down is bubbled up. Star Trek Into Darkness, and I haven't thought about it in a while, and I'm glad I'm getting this out. When I think about it, if I get intellectually, excited enough to talk about it, I get really upset about that movie because, I'm going to get mad. Here we go. Going to get mad. Here we go. Star Trek, let's reboot Star Trek. We are going to imagine how many emails and meetings and how much money and time and energy was spent casting Captain Kirk. Mm-hmm. Multiply again with Spock, multiply again with Bones, et cetera, et cetera. All the energy that went into making something that's Star Trek. I am making a new Enterprise. How many drawing board versions of a new Enterprise had to be created until they found the one that worked? And you just go down the list of everything they had to do to make brand new Star Trek. That's an amazing endeavor. Just at the concept level, let's bring it. Think about that. Let's go back to 2005, 6, 7, whatever. When someone comes up with the idea, we are from scratch. We are redoing Star Trek. All the work that led up to the day when that movie is out in the theaters and we go get to see it. The amount of human power to make that endeavor happen is incredible. It's kind of staggering to think about. And then at the end of that movie, you've gotten Kirk, Spock, Chekhov, McCoy, the whole gang is here. You got the Enterprise. You've got a hit, right? It's not a flop. It's a hit. You got J.J. Abrams. You've got all of this goodwill. The audience is – you got a new generation to care. And now you get to go out and tell any story you want. You threw away an entire universe.
Yeah.
To remake a new one, right? Throw away the Prime Universe, which is decades old, decades full of books, movies, tie-ins. No. Throw all that away. Clean the slate. We get to do anything. We have the whitest, blankest piece of paper you've ever seen. Do whatever you want. Let's remake Wrath of Khan. That's what we should do. We could do any. We blew away the entire universe. But what's the safe you know, show business, you know, easy, sellable, marketable idea. Let's bring back Khan. That idea is so bad at the concept before you ever even get beyond, who would play Khan? Forget that. Forget anything you're going to – forget anything. You know, go back to what I was saying, that starting point. We are doing part two. What are we going to do? Let's do Khan again. Why? Why would anyone think that that's a good idea outside of purely sad, pathetic marketing? You should have done that as the third or fourth sequel after you've run out of ideas. Then bring back Khan, right? You now can do anything you want, and they couldn't do it. They whiffed it. They completely, they sliced off into the woods. And that at the concept level is terrible. And then to, okay, you're going to redo Khan, even though that's a terrible idea, horrible idea. If they had said that from day one, the fans would have baked them alive, right?
Right, yeah.
the torches in the street, we are redoing Wrath of Khan. Of course they had to hide it because the fans would have hated it. And then the movie comes out and guess what? The fans don't, love it. And that really hurt their credibility. They could have done anything. And then they did that. Not only did they do that, but then you're going to bring back the big moment of Khan. You're going to bring back that moment. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have the moment of Kirk and Spock in a death scene, but only reversed.
Yeah.
But then you're going to kill Kirk only to bring him back 10 minutes later. I mean, at the concept level, all of those ideas are so mind-buggeringly terrible.
Yeah.
It's not hard to hate theoretically what's wrong with Star Trek Into Darkness, but forgetting all that, when I watch it, I have a really good time. Not until it's over I hate it.
Yeah, the timeline is all messed up because it's just Wrath of Khan. That movie didn't even take place until 10-15 years after the original series. They were really making a remake. They were supposed to be making a remake of Space Seed, but then they have to put the death scene in there and the Khan and all that kind of stuff from Wrath of Khan. So the timeline doesn't even work out for it to be a remake of Wrath of Khan, because we're supposed to be watching a movie that takes place during the original series, not during the movies.
Hey, Sean, you've listened to some of our previous podcasts, 11-22-63, an event podcast. You've heard some of that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this was one half of what the Star Trek podcast could have been. There you go. That's about as close as and you had the other half previously. So
well, how did you feel about? So you were doing a podcast about 11-22-63. Now if you go back and listen to those episodes, there's a lot about that show that you didn't like.
Ooh.
So what made you keep going? Other than the fact that it was only, you only had to get through 9 episodes, right? So
I wasn't Chris. Chris was more negative, although there were like 2 episodes in there that were pretty rough. I think I was I was pretty positive throughout most of the show. I hated what they did with the character Bill Turkett. That was the biggest Achilles heel in the entire thing.
Right.
Why are we talking about another J.J. Abrams thing?
That's right.
It all ties together. I basically like the miniseries. I have the Hulu series. I had a good time with it. I have quibbles, but it's a big, sprawling attempt to bring a very big and sprawling book to life, and it basically succeeds with quite a few caveats. So it never got, I can't watch this anymore. No, it never got anywhere close to that. In fact, even a bad episode, I was still on the edge of my seat week to week. And I don't know, we've talked about this in the past, and maybe you should do it. And we will certainly attempt to do it with Castle Rock. But we got the episodes ahead of time so that we could get our podcast out because, you know, as you know, our podcasts were very long, as evidenced by me rambling on today. We could talk. I could talk and Chris can talk. Put us together. We never shut up. But we needed to get all that talking out right as the show was coming out, then edit it and get it out. And so we wanted our show to come out the very next day after it aired. And so we asked Hulu to, you know, get a press pass, and they gave it to us. So we had the ability to see the episodes beforehand and record them ahead of time, and we deliberately did not watch ahead. So we would watch an episode, record, or, you know, figure out, you know, work in our schedules or whatever, get it in the can. It wasn't until we got an episode recorded that we could move on to the next episode. So we could, you know, accurately say what's going to happen next week. Well, we didn't know because we hadn't seen it. That's how we did it. So I don't know if you're going to try to do the same thing for Star Trek.
I haven't even thought about watching the episodes ahead. The plan was just to watch, because the episodes come out on Sundays, which I don't know if they'll do it the same way that Stars did with American Gods, but on American Gods, the show came on Sunday night. But if you watched it online, you could watch it at midnight on Saturday. So I'm kind of wondering if they'll do the same thing. Hopefully we'll be able to watch the show on Sunday and then probably record on Monday and then get the show out by Tuesday or Wednesday. That's the hope, you know. So, but we'll see. I want to ask you one more Star Trek question, and then I'm going to talk to you about the Castle Rock. As a Star Trek fan, we're all constantly exposed to little tidbits of philosophy, life lessons, and things like that. So, what do you feel Star Trek did for you, if anything, that you can say made your life better?
Ooh. Oh boy, it's tough to answer that question without getting political. But I think it's mostly considered pretty safe to say that Star Trek is pretty much liberal utopia, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty left-leaning. You know, there's a reasonable way to approach things. When we have conflicts, we can talk it out. We don't need to fling bombs. And, you know, war is a last resort. And all of the things that, you know, liberals tend, you know, why can't we help the poor? Why is this such a terrible idea? What do you mean we can't afford it? If we can, you know, someday you could be there. Can we afford it then? Right. You know, all those liberal notions, all the tree hugging nonsense that people, you know, love to ridicule. I probably got a lot of that from Star Trek. It did show me a world that I wanted to live in. You know, there was diversity. There was different points of view. You know, you could want to fling a bomb first. Let me hear your argument, right? There could be different ways of looking at things. Not this my way, only way, this way, I won't change under any circumstances, you know. Liberal in the concept of being liberal and being progressive and being more inclusive. A lot of that comes from, you know, what Star Trek is, you know, selling, so to speak.
Yeah.
Although they never, you know, go out of their way to say, hey, you should vote Democrat. You know, they never say that. But it would be very hard to love Star Trek and, you know, root for those characters and then, you know, want to vote Republican conservative. And I'm sure there'll probably be plenty of people out there going, you are completely wrong there, Mr. Martin. But I think the show certainly, shines a light on that way of looking at things. And I like looking at things that way. I like being reasonable. What's wrong with being reasonable?
Nothing. Okay, so the Castle Rock, what is the name of the Castle Rock podcast that you're going to be doing?
The Castle Rock TV podcast.
Okay.
And it's still in its early stages. We just cut together something. Would you like to do a live experiment?
Sure.
Ooh, let's do something live. All right, I'm going to have a little fun with you. Because we just did this. This is going to be funny. We just cut together a video version of the trailer. Ooh, we're going to debut it for you. You personally, you and you only are going to get to see this. So I'm going to send you a quick link and have you watch it live.
Okay.
And you tell me what you see. Because we just finished it. Holy crap. That's so funny. All right. All right. Hang on a second.
I know Christopher had sent me the little audio commercial that you guys had put together. And I'm
right.
And
well,
I ran it on the Cosmic Potato when I the last episode that I did.
Okay, I get to give you a little inside baseball here. I'm sending you on Skype the link, although I cannot find, there we go. I am giving you the link there.
Okay.
So before you play that, he cut together the spot that you debuted, and he said he wanted to do a video version of it. And he might hate me for saying this. but he had a less than inspired idea. Skip, why don't you just throw it up on YouTube? I said, okay, well, what's the video? He said, well, just, you know, throw up our logo. I went, what? No. No.
You said, work in TV. You can't just do that.
No, I can't just do that. So this is what I came up with. You take a look and then you give me your feedback.
Okay. I'm playing it now. Let's see. I don't think the audio is going to play over Skype.
It's okay. It's only 1 minute long.
Hey everyone, I'm Christopher DeFilippis.
My name is Skipper Martin.
And
so right now, your talent pool went behind this promo. You won't believe the visuals that I have scoured the earth to put together. No, it's not that great.
It does look good, though.
TV movies, it's not even close to being that great.
So there's a lot of clips from the...
We're going to do it, right, Chris?
Yep.
From all the Stephen King movies and the miniseries and things like that. Yeah, there's The Shining.
Are you saying I padded my...
No. I'm just... Yeah.
No, there... well, all I did was I took... So I padded the spot with nothing but Stephen King visuals. Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that this is what I'm seeing. Yeah. No, it was good, though.
Pennywise
looks freaky. The new Pennywise just looks completely freaky to me.
It does look pretty incredible. Yeah. Okay, so give me your reaction. The first live reaction, the only person who has seen this video spot besides me and Chris.
I like it. I mean, I'm a Stephen King fan, so I've seen all these movies. And so, you know, it's firing off some memories in the old cerebellum, I guess.
Well, the fact is we are going to be talking. I tried to put in stuff that we are going to talk about. So, the whole Castle Rock thing at the moment is so early on because, you know, they're still casting the thing. And when we found out about it, J.J. Abrams is getting together with Hulu and Stephen King again to do a new, you know, a new miniseries. I wasn't even I'm dying to see it, but I certainly wasn't dying to do a new podcast. And then the more I thought about it, more Chris and I spoke about it. The concept behind the show sounds really rich, as opposed to, hey, let's do another Stephen King book, right? Or let's do another movie. This is much broader scope than that. It's a really unique idea. At the concept level, it sounds incredible. You know, they are taking the universe of Stephen King and telling a, you know, small anthology where all these stories are going to kind of rub up against each other. So Pennywise can show up, Annie Wilkes from Misery can show up, and anything from Stephen King can show up. And that's pretty exciting. But for us, it means that we need to bone up on our Stephen King.
Yeah.
So even before they shoot it, that gives us the opportunity now to start going through many of those Stephen King, you know, properties. And so we're starting off with It, which is to me more one of the most obvious choices because the movie, upcoming movie trailer is so incredible. Well, we have a book and, you know, late 80s, early 90s miniseries to talk about. So it seemed to be the perfect choice to kick us off. So we're doing It, the novel, It, the miniseries leading up to It, the movie, and then we're going to hit I think Salem's Lot is the one we're probably going to do after that, and we'll be hitting Misery and, you know, a bunch of other, you know, the stuff that is teased at in the trailer. We're going to try and hit a bunch of those leading up to the big drop of Castle Rock, the television series from Hulu, coming out probably sometime next year. Although at the moment, we have no way of knowing. Mm-hmm. The only thing we know is that Sissy Spacek has been cast, and Bill Sarsgaard, the guy who plays Pennywise, he has now been added. So now Pennywise is definitely most likely going to be in there, and blah, 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 blah. So,
yeah, because when I saw the original concept for the show, I didn't know if what they were telling me was this was going to be a show with all these characters in it, or if we're going to be seeing a show that takes place in the town where all this stuff has happened before. So this is going to be like a new thing, but yeah, if those characters are possibly going to show up, you know, that could be something.
It's exciting. If you're a Stephen King fan, it's definitely exciting. And how many other properties are going to, you know, find a way in there? It should be interesting. I'm so curious how. I hope they find. That's the big thing that we're worried about. Are they going to be able to integrate all that stuff in a really compelling way, as opposed to just walking by a character? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We joked in the 112263 show that they literally painted red rum on a wall and they ran by it, which, of course, has nothing to do with anything other than Stephen King fans going, ooh, red rum is painted on a wall. And so we really hope that they don't just paint red rum on a wall.
Yeah, but we hope The Shining didn't even take place in Castle Rock.
Exactly.
It takes place in Colorado. Yeah.
So how are they going to believably weave that in there? And hopefully they'll find compelling and interesting ways to weave in Stephen King lore without it being red rum on a wall. That's what we hope. We hope that they can be a little bit more creative than that.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's been weaving things in and out of his novels for a long time. I love Stephen King novels. There's a lot of TV based on Stephen King novels that is not good, you know, but, I mean, there's been a lot of movies, Stephen King movies that I love, but there's a few of them out there that are just like, oh, you know, but
more than a few.
I do like that they're doing it this way. I like the modern version of the miniseries. Because, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you got a two-night event with a two-hour movie on each night. Cut for commercials, it's an hour and a half, so you're getting a three-hour movie, really. But do it this way, you can get an 8, 9, or 10-hour miniseries, and you're able to flesh out a lot more stuff. I think the old style of the miniseries has kind of gone away and made room for what we're seeing now with this and 112263, you know. I'm looking forward to The Dark Tower, but I kind of wish that it had been like an HBO series, because there's a lot of stuff going on in those books that I'm afraid of how much of it's going to wind up being chopped out because they're making movies out of it instead of fleshing it out into an ongoing TV show.
Yeah, I hate to be, again, negative. I'm not loving what I see in the Dark Tower trailers.
Really?
I don't hate it. I love Idris Elba. I love Matthew McConaughey. So I've got no problem there. But some of the magic crap he's doing with the gun and the bullets is just so ridiculous looking. You know, he's flinging bullets into the air and catching them in the chambers and nonsense. I saw that and went, that really? Oh boy. Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he lives in kind of a magic land, but the thing is that the first movie is kind of mostly based on the first book, The Gunslinger, which is not the best book in the series. You know,
it
gets a lot better as it goes on, but you have to. That's why I kind of thought that this first movie would kind of blend the first couple of books together. But from what I see in the trailer, that's not what it looks like they're doing. Because the only
No. I think you're forgetting certain things. It really looks like it's basically book one and two blended together, or at least a good part of two. Eddie is there, but you also have him coming to our world. That didn't happen until Drawing of the Three. So they're clearly trying to take some of the best parts of my favorite book. My favorite Dark Tower book, Dark Tower 2, Drawing of the Three. Mm. So for him to come to our world, that did not happen in the first book. So, and it looks like they have to lean on that to make audiences you know, relate to it at all. Oh, this character is coming to our world. That's why I found book two to be so compelling, because you take this dry, dusty, you know, old, broken down alien sort of character from this other world and drop him into our world. That's one of the things that made that book so, so amazing. And to put that in the first movie, it feels like you almost have to do it just to make it a compelling movie, because, you know, the man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed, and rinse repeat for about, you know, 300-400 pages of walking through the desert. Yeah, you can't make a movie out of that. You could, but you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I didn't see how they could do the first movie without finding a way to put Eddie in there, because Eddie is the comic relief. Roland is such a, I mean, he's a good character, but he's not like a fun guy to be around, you know? And so if you don't have some kind of a character in there to kind of play a little bit of comedy off of that, you know, it's just going to be an intense, long, drawn out slog of a movie, which
it sounds like they're going to, you know, probably lean more on Jake, you know, to keep it a little lighter. And Roland himself, Idris Elba looks really good as Roland.
Yeah.
So I've got no complaints there. He looks seriously compelling. And going back to what we said way back at the beginning of the podcast, you want to talk about someone who just holds the screen and grabs your attention? Idris freaking Elba.
Yeah.
You know, that guy, you know, has it all. He's just oozing that. He leaps off and grabs your attention. And, you know, the trailer looks, it has a lot in it that looks good, but I can't say I loved it. I'm just cautiously optimistic in that regard. I'm more excited about Castle Rock and, oh my God, that It trailer.
Yeah.
Now that's a trailer. That's probably one of the best trailers I've seen in a very long time. The It trailer, that one gets your blood pumping.
Yeah. And that's another one that you don't know how much is going to end up being chopped out, because It is a thick book. I mean, I've said before, Stephen King gets paid by the inch. You know, to be able to take that book and just turn it into a two-hour movie, they've got to be chopping a lot of it out, because there's no way. That's why the first one was a miniseries, just to get another hour in there, you know.
Well, you are aware that this is a two-part movie.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah, I was not aware of that. There you go.
Okay, yeah. So that's one of the things that, you know, I mentioned to Chris early on. What makes the Castle Rock endeavor interesting is that even if we, let's say, only do the first season, because we have no idea how long Castle Rock's going to go.
Yeah.
It could fail. It could be, you know, just a complete bomb. And even if it is, there could be a finale episode for us next year because they are shooting, I believe, the sequel to It immediately. It was created as a two-part movie. So the first movie is The Kids. I think it's called It, The Losers Club. I could be wrong about that. But I think the first movie is focusing on the kids, and the second movie is focusing on the adults. So they did break it. And I am currently rereading It for the podcast. And I am not loving it as much as I remembered reading it the first time. The opening of this book, the first few hundred pages, is incredible. But now I'm well into I think it's a 5-part book, and I just finished the second part, which means I'm up to like page 450 something, and it is starting to drag.
Yeah. Yeah, he does that, because his style of writing, I read his book on writing, and he kind of outlined how he does his process. And basically, he gets up in the morning, he goes into his office, and he writes at least 1,000 words every day. Sometimes he stops at 1,000, sometimes he keeps writing. But his books kind of show that, because he does kind of meander, you know, kind of back and forth. He gets into the juicy part of the plot, and then he goes off and does something else. I don't know if you ever read Under the Dome.
I did not read Under the Dome. It's one of the ones that I feel bad I haven't read. I've read about 40 of his books.
Good book. Terrible TV show, but good book. But he kind of did that, because he had a cast of characters that took place in this town. So he had all these characters that were all over town. So he would go and he would visit these characters for a chapter, and then he would go over and he'd visit and see what these characters were doing, because the whole book takes place in like a week, you know, so he's going back and forth and visiting with these characters. And he kind of said that in an interview that I saw at the time when that book came out, that he just kept a list of all of his characters. And after a while, he'd say, you know what, let me go back and see what these characters are doing. And then he would write a chapter about those characters. So yeah, he does, his style shows in that. And that's why I think that he gets, why his books are so thick, you know, because he kind of goes back and he doesn't streamline, you know, he just, which his fans love it, you know, we love for a Stephen King, but we want a Stephen King book to come out and it be 1,000 pages, you know.
You know, this is a kind of an unfair criticism, but maybe, you know, I loved it when I first read it. So, you know, how do you make a book that can be reread many, many times? Now, I've met people who've reread it. So it's not that it can't be reread, but for me personally, I'm having a difficult time getting through it a second time. The Stand I read at least 3 or 4 times. So it can be done.
Yeah. Well, see, most of his books I've only read once. I know I read The Stand once. I read it once. Just because he's got such a huge library of books, and you know, I can't go back. If I reread all his books over and over, and then I'll never read anything else.
That's true. That's very true. I do want to read Under the Dome, and I would very much. I loved 11/22/63 as a book. Holy crap! A really, really strong book, and one of his better ones. And I'd like to read the current trilogy he's got, the Mr. Mercedes trilogy, I believe is what it is. I know that's coming out. Unfortunately, I've got my homework to do for the podcast, so I got to get through this brick called It first, and so I got a long way to go. But I know that we've already recorded our first episode, and that show I was really happy with. We had so many great things to talk about. The second episode, I'm again looking forward. Every time Chris and I get on the mic, you know, I have no idea, you know, what we're going to do. And it usually works out just fine because we always seem to disagree about something.
Yeah.
but when it comes to the whole Castle Rock experience, this should be really interesting going through and reabsorbing Misery the book and Misery the movie and so many of the other properties, and all building up to when Castle Rock drops. That's really incredible. I'm looking forward to it.
Do you know if the TV show, if Castle Rock is supposed to take place in present day, or if it's supposed to be set, is it supposed to be a period piece, or do you even know?
I don't think it's been revealed.
Okay.
Maybe. But because so many of the properties that got mentioned take place in the past, mm-hmm. It makes sense that it's most likely, in the past. I would assume it's in the past, considering when the books were set.
So if it's set in the past, there will probably be a lot of radios.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah.
And listeners, listeners, you'll have to go listen to 11/22/63, the event podcast, to get that joke.
But. Yeah, Chris has a fetish, and yeah. and he indulges, and it's all about the old radios.
All right.
And we rib him for it, because he should be ribbed for it, and he deserves it. Shout out to Chris DeFilippis; he's a hell of a guy.
And before we wrap up, do you want to say anything about Bizarre New World?
Well, that's one of the things, when it comes to me, my name is Skipper Martin. I'm a writer as well as a colorist and podcaster. And, I wrote and created a book called Bizarre New World, which tells, details and, you know, chronicles what would happen if the human race could fly. And the entire series took me almost a decade to make and more than a few pennies out of my pocket. And it's for sale right now. Go to fracturedentertainment.com. And you can buy the whole thing for like $10, and it's like 500 pages, people. So it's worth $10. I promise you. You can read it digitally. You'll be reading it on your computer. You can hit PayPal and be reading it in a few minutes. So, fracturedentertainment.com is where you can go pick up Bizarre New World. But in preparation for the new Castle Rock podcast, I wanted to make sure that I had more of my stuff finished. So I'm finally releasing Martin Repossession is another book that's coming out, as well as what I cheekily called Skipper Martin's Vanity Project is also coming out. So those are all going to be available, later when we debut the Castle Rock TV podcast. And they're all going to be digital. And if you go to fracturedentertainment.com, you'll be able to find all of them.
All right. Well, Skipper, thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
This is the second time I've been with you, man, and you're really good at this. So, thanks for taking the time to give me a call and talk about this stuff. But, you know your stuff, and you do a good job, sir. And, we need to kiss our host's ass a little bit more. This is a hint to anyone else I'm talking to in the future. You know, the host needs a little ass kissing from time to time. So pucker up, because it's well worth it. There's a lot of work being done here, and we ain't making any money, folks. So we're looking for the attaboys and the claps on the back. So attaboy and clap on the back, dude.
The Prime Direction is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. It can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and of course on our website at cosmicpotato.com. Please be sure to leave us a review wherever you find the show. That will go a long way toward helping other people find the podcast. Every fan has a story. If you would like to come on the show and tell me the story of your Star Trek fandom, send me an email at mail@cosmicpotato.com. Remember, there are a lot of people that want to be on the show, so please be patient, and I'll write back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for listening to the show. Be sure to look for more episodes as I continue to bring you more stories of Star Trek fans and their prime direction.